You are tuning into Pro Bono Perspectives, live from Brooklyn, where the city never sleeps and purpose is more than just a buzzword. Pro Bono Perspectives brings together leaders that have traveled across sectors, industries, and experiences on their path to creating change for the communities in which they live and work. And I'm your host, Danielle Holly, CEO of Common Impact, a national nonprofit that designs skills-based volunteer programs that amplify the impact of social change organizations by harnessing the talents and the skills of private sector employees. I am lucky enough to cross paths with these leaders every day through my work with Common Impact and can't wait to bring you behind the scenes to share their stories.
COVID has highlighted and exacerbated so many of the inequities that exist within our society, from healthcare to housing to education. This month, September 2020, children across the country are heading back to school in an entirely new world. And for many, that means setting up a desk in their homes and sitting in front of a computer as teachers bring their lessons plan and their curriculum to a virtual environment. Except so many children don't have the computers and the broadband they need to access their classrooms and their education. The digital divide, or as some call it, the homework gap, it's deepening as technology moves from being an amplifier of education to being an absolute necessity. According to a report that was recently released by the Alliance for Excellent Education, more than 30% of Black, Latinx, and Indigenous communities lack high-speed internet in their homes, and more than 15% don't have a computer. That means more than 17 million children aren't going back to school this year. So this month on Pro Bono Perspectives, we're talking to educators, corporate, and social sector professionals that are trying to bridge this divide. And today, my conversation is with Greg Bethile, the president of New York City-based education nonprofit Pencil, an amazing organization whose vision is to create a city filled with students whose opportunities match their ambitions. And he'll share how Pencil pivoted its programs to a virtual environment, how it's trying to ensure that all New York City kids have an opportunity to succeed, and what he sees for the future of education.
Greg, welcome to the podcast. So glad to have you here today.
Great to be here with you, Danielle.
So let's start with your career experience. You were first a teacher and then a vice principal, and later you moved to the New York City Department of Education, and now you're at Pencil, which is an education organization that works with business volunteers, and you'll share a little bit more about that. Tell us how you got from the classroom to where you are today.
And looking back 25 years, that journey from the classroom to Pencil has been a long and winding one. I came out of graduate school and wanted to go into educational policy. Had a professor who suggested that I become a teacher. Got lucky in landing at Martin Luther King High School in Midtown Manhattan. And while I was there, fell into a program called the Academy of Finance that was helping prepare students to get exposed to Wall Street careers. So we were engaging mentors and going on field trips and placing students in internships. And so right from the very beginning, I always had this perspective beyond the classroom, out into the larger city and the world. Eventually, I went to work for the foundation that supported the Academy of Finance and got to see high schools and high school students in communities all around the United States, which gave me a broad perspective on both what was possible and the challenges we were facing in the early 2000s around high school outcomes. And eventually got asked by Joel Klein and Mike Bloomberg to come help out with career and tech ed for the New York City Department of Education, and was there for about 6 years on a whole range of projects all centered around college and career readiness. And eventually found my way to Pencil, that was really about bringing together the business community, schools, and students to really help put kids on a path to success. So it's been quite the journey.
And Pencil shares Common Impact's belief that business is a powerful force for good, and particularly the volunteers and skills of individual corporate employees when you bring them proximate to nonprofits and social challenges can drive that force. And would love for you to share a little more about what Pencil does and some of the models that you have to collaborate between the business community and public schools. Really interesting model.
Yeah, Pencil's model is really straightforward. It started as an opportunity to open up the school system to the range of business and civic leaders in New York City through our Principal for a Day program. It started all the way back in 1995, and Principal for a Day is exactly what it sounds like, a business, a civic leader, shadowing a public school principal for a day. And we found that it really began to open eyes to the business community about the potential and opportunity there was to support students in public schools. Over the last 25 years, we've supported hundreds of partnerships where businesses and have stayed involved with schools, mentoring relationships, exposing students to the world of work and the paths into that world of work. But most importantly, what's emerged from that are the range of relationships between our business volunteers and the students that they work with that we like to say open eyes, open minds, and open doors, not only for the students, but also for the volunteers themselves and the perspective they have. So today, we're still doing Principal for a Day 25 years later, but we have an extended school year partnership program, as well as running a summer internship program where students really get some of that hands-on experience working with their business mentors in the workplace.
I'm so curious what these business volunteers who serve as principal for a day, what changes in their perspective when they come out of a program like that or a day like that? Like, what do you hear from them?
Well, look, one of the biggest challenges we have is that you get all sorts of perspective on what people think the public schools are going to be like. Many of our business volunteers don't have children in the public schools. They may not have attended the public schools in New York City. And so they come in with a lot of myths and sometimes stereotypes about what they're going to encounter. And our job is to make it comfortable for people to come together and really begin to get to know each other. And I think each and every time we do that, our business volunteers are saying they're surprised and excited to be engaging with students who hold so much promise and potential, but need every opportunity that you and I may have taken for granted as we were growing up to really get onto that path to college and career success. So often after Principal for a Day, people think that it was just going to be that one day commitment, but they come back motivated and inspired to find out how they can do more. And that's usually when they bring their company in and groups of volunteers from their organization to engage with students through a school year partnership that our Pencil team is there to help facilitate.
So what does this look like now? Educational organizations and public school systems obviously have been so deeply impacted by COVID-19 and the virtual environment. How have you thought about bringing that experience into a virtual environment, or have you had to just stop it?
We left our office on March 12th, like many in the city did. The schools closed down just a couple of days later. And immediately, and I couldn't be prouder of the Pencil team, the question was very simply, our job is to bring together the business community, educators, and students in a range of hands-on experiences. And if we can't be together in a physical space, how do we do that? We immediately pivoted to working virtually, started bringing people together in a series of interactive webinars and conversations that we were doing. A number of our partners jumped right in to ask how they could help with schools. Some were donating computers and laptops. Others were just coaching principals on how to begin to navigate the early days of working with a remote staff. And as a reminder, every business in the city was grappling with those same questions themselves. So when I look back on what has really been a very challenging 6 months, beyond the health challenges and just what everybody has been doing to try and stay safe, making sure that we could create interactive opportunities for our volunteers that were often working from home, but looking for a way to give back, and our students who were often getting every one of their classes via a webinar or a video. We really tried to create opportunities to develop new relationships and conversations that we had thousands of students take advantage of over the last few months, both open source to students across the New York City schools, and then also this summer, as we pivoted to a virtual internship program and made sure that students were ready to work virtually, just like all of us have been doing in our jobs.
I've always so admired your
leadership approach in your style. You know, you're someone I often go to when I have a big question I'm asking myself about Common Impact, whether that's a diversity initiative or we most recently spoke about this return to office, return to quote unquote new normal. And curious how you thought about leading your organization and your team members through this time when so many folks were just really thrown, right? Even if they were healthy and even if they had the right environment and the tools that they needed to engage and their jobs were secure, it's still an incredibly uncertain time. And nonprofit staff in particular are really close to the challenges that COVID and all of the other societal ills that we're all trying to solve together, really close to that every day. And curious how you thought about that, if that pivoted in this environment or it was just, you know, keeping that stability and that leadership that you had beforehand.
It was certainly one of the biggest leadership challenges that I've faced in my career. And as you said, the uncertainty of the whole situation was the biggest challenge because our staff, our board of directors, many of our volunteers were just looking to us to say what's coming next and how can we help? And the answers weren't always clear and obvious. We just tried to be candid and transparent with people, sharing information, being an intermediary between the business community and the schools. We had to make sure that our staff were aware of what was happening in schools and the challenges our business partners were facing. Making sure everybody had their technology set up was an important thing for us. If we were going to be in a position to help teachers and help bring together students. But the biggest challenge with any nonprofit, and I'm sure it's the same for Common Impact, we're committed to a mission. And when you see the constituencies that you're working with struggling, you feel that deeply. And at the same time, a challenging fundraising environment and challenging to find space as everybody is trying to take care of themselves, to ask people to go a step beyond themselves and help out others. But we've been fortunate to have an enthusiastic group of volunteers, an incredibly supportive board of directors, and our staff have really stepped up at every turn to ask, how can we do more? How can we be better at this? And from my side of it on the leadership, it's really, how do we care for that staff? Sometimes it's been an extra day off, reminding people that they should take vacation, trying not to call people at 9 o'clock at night or at 7:30 in the morning, so that we can still set some of those boundaries for work-life balance, even if we're all sitting at home doing our work.
Right.
But it certainly hasn't been easy, and I don't think we're to the other side of it yet. We likely won't be back in our office until at least January.
Well, and you know, that is particularly as you're heading into the school year, and I imagine your programs are ramping up or at least changing. One of the things that has been so present now in headlines has been the digital divide. Not a new problem, right? Kids having access to the technology they need to learn in our current educational system, but now it has been so exacerbated. And that's true across many mission areas, but particularly in education. And would be curious how, if that has impacted your programming, what you're seeing on the front lines there.
Well, I think the most important thing about the digital divide is it's not new and it certainly wasn't caused by COVID. I think the shift that happened is we went from technology being a luxury and an add-on to becoming the main mode of instructional delivery for schools across the country. And what became very clear very early on is that some students didn't have broadband internet access at home, or at least sufficient internet access at home. Some didn't have computers. I think the New York City Department of Education did a phenomenal job under difficult circumstances of bringing together partners, hundreds of thousands of devices delivered, and not just to apartments, but to homeless shelters and to individual students to make sure that those students would have an opportunity to learn. For Pensl, it was about figuring out once students got online, how did we make that time worthwhile? And we would see it regularly. Some students weren't able to join via video, only via audio, because their bandwidth didn't allow for it. We had other students where brother and sister both needed to be on in different classes, and their bandwidth would go in and out. Even basic things like students who couldn't find a quiet place in an apartment where they might have an extended family that they were sharing space with. And something as simple as a set of headphones and a microphone was what they needed to be able to be productive there. But we also saw that students were resilient and they found ways to make that work. But there is no doubt when we look at some of the outcomes from the end of the school year and even this summer, that there were definitely students that were left behind and those that were unable to get the access they needed. We saw that in particular with special education populations and others where the range of services they get from their schools are critical to them navigating every day. So I think the school district is making progress on that. They've been serving meals to millions of folks across New York City every day. And I think they're really working to do the best they can to deliver a school year that will be a combination of online and in-person, but putting the health and safety of students and teachers first, even though the very beginning of the school year is still very much up for debate as teachers and principals and the district administrators really feel their way through how they're going to make sure everybody's comfortable.
And it's hard to really imagine unless you're up close to it or in it. And it just seems like an incredibly impossible situation. And, you know, in the way that the digital divide is not a new problem, the economic and racial inequity and injustice that we are also seeing within this context, not a new problem, but is really being highlighted. And those fault lines seem to be growing. And, you know, when I think about communities of color or low-income communities and having children at home who don't have the access to the technology they need to access their school environment and also no childcare and a lack of ability to give up paid labor, right? I mean, it's just all so intricately connected. And I'd be curious, you've been in the school system for 25 years. Do those racial and economic inequities feel different or exacerbated from what you're seeing? Obviously, the digital divide has moved in the way that you just articulated from amplifier of education to absolutely necessary, but curious for some of those other more systemic issues, if you're seeing a change.
I think absolutely. I think recent events have made it clear that when we get to the other side of this pandemic, that returning to quote unquote normal is not an option. I don't think any of the inequities that we're seeing or the challenges that particularly Black and Brown communities have faced during the pandemic, they're not new. If anything, the pandemic has just shined a light on things that may not have been clear to many people in society or were able to ignore. In Pensil's work, we have been trying to address educational inequity for the last 25 years, but we have also reflected ourselves on why it is those inequities exist to begin with. And we need to be more explicit about understanding the systemic roots of these challenges and not just helping individual students beat the odds. Our work really needs to be about how do we contribute to changing the odds so that more students have an opportunity to live in a city where their opportunities match their ambitions. But the New York City schools are among the most segregated in the United States. It wasn't always that way. But when you look at the impacts of things like redlining and wealth accumulation, underinvestment in our public systems for many years, none of the differences in outcomes that we see should be surprising. And while there has certainly been significant progress that's been made in New York City in the last 15 to 20 years in terms of improving educational outcomes, we know that still young Black men in the New York City schools have fewer opportunities and chances of graduating high school on time and being ready for college and career. And so as far as we've come, I think we can be honest with ourselves. We still have a long way to go. And I'm hoping that the clarity that has emerged from the pandemic gives us all an opportunity to be honest with ourselves and have our eyes open to the work that we collectively need to do to make sure that Black and Brown students have all of the opportunities that many of us in a privileged position have come to take for granted. But I don't know how we go back to the way it was. I think we need to double down and really make sure that we're creating opportunities for those that have been disproportionately affected not only by this pandemic, but by the systemic roots of racial injustice that many have lived with for a lifetime.
Well, and I think it goes back to what you were saying earlier in the power of this model and bringing business volunteers into the classroom and into these programs that break down those stereotypes and those perceptions of what public school is, and also helps, I'm sure, them understand where they might be able to help individually and through their companies. And I know that in our conversations, Pencil is very focused on the positive impact on the students and creating those opportunities for the students. And I wonder if you think about impact on your volunteers and what that could mean for systems change.
Yeah, look, we talk at Pencil about connecting students to success by bringing together business professionals, educators, and students to open eyes, open minds, and open doors. And that language for us is very intentional and connects to a theory of change that says it is important for students to have access to the relationships, skills, and opportunities that are going to put them on a path to success, but that there is also impact on our volunteers and the businesses that they hail from that have their eyes open and their minds open to the potential and understand the role that they can play in opening the door of opportunity to the next generation that our students in New York City represent. As we have navigated, certainly since the murder of George Floyd and Ahmaud Arbery and Breonna Taylor, we've reflected on where do we find the balance in those relationships and how important is it both to make sure that the students that we have always focused on have those opportunities, but how do we become more candid about the opportunity to open the eyes of our employer partners who are looking for those opportunities. Many of our employer partners have been working on their own diversity initiatives for years or are trying to figure out how to make their workplaces attractive to diverse employees. And they are seeking out these opportunities. So I don't see people shying away from it, not the partners we've worked with across New York City, but we see people being honest about the broader impact that openly engaging in these relationships with communities, with schools, and with students that they may not normally cross paths with is an incredibly valuable opportunity and one that has an impact on everybody who's involved in these relationships with the public schools.
So if you had a crystal ball, you'd be very rich right now. But take us to what you think the education system looks like after we've overcome this pandemic. We have a vaccine. We're going back to a place where we can gather again and feel safe in schools. What do you think will have changed in education because of the current crisis?
Well, first, I think we need to be honest that this is going to be a very challenging year for our public schools, for parents, for students, for teachers, for principals. And I think all of us have to do everything we can to look out for each other and support everybody moving through. The district is doing everything it can to make schools safe places for folks to come back to. But we know that it is very easy for the virus to come back and for schools to potentially have to shut down again and move back online. So I think first and foremost, let's be honest about what's in front of us in this next school year. And rather than pointing the fingers at each other, how do we come together to do the best we can to make sure that this is as productive a year as possible? On the other side of this, I think there's two futures I can imagine. I am hopeful that we're learning a lot about how to make sure that learning opportunities can go beyond just what happens in schools, and that schools will continue to rely on community partners and parents and businesses to help support the growth of students. But I also know that we have work to do to make sure that we are expanding those opportunities beyond those that have traditionally taken advantage of it. So I hope that next year at this time, we're talking about the new opportunities that are available to students. We're improving the quality of instruction. We're connecting students to a range of opportunities that heretofore they may not have been able to connect to. I worry that it may be too easy for us to fall back on the old normal and forget what we've learned during this. So I think it's going to be incumbent on everybody to be comfortable reminding ourselves that we have work to do.
I think that's such an important point, because so much of the narrative, particularly in the media, has been about a dramatic transformation of the world following this. And we need that dramatic transformation in many ways. And I also know how strong muscle memory is, right? And how eager people are to get back to comfort and what they felt was normal. And I think we're going to have to hold that tension. And to your point, remind ourselves of what we have been exposed to and, you know, hold the good parts and hopefully leave what has been so damaging to our society in the past. And that's Pollyanna of me to say, completely leave it in the past. But I think there is, especially with the murdering of Black Americans over the past couple of months, there is something that feels different about the momentum and the advocacy and the call to action that even large, usually risk-averse institutions are feeling right now. And so I think to the extent that we can harness that and keep pushing forward, even when we go back to a relatively normal state or a non-crisis state, that's such important words.
Look, I think without a doubt, we all need to carry this momentum forward. And I think what has changed in this moment is that we have realized that to get to the equitable society and the quality of opportunity, that this work is collective work. And it is not just for the Black community to call attention to it, but for all of us to be allies in that struggle. And that will be the conversation moving forward. If there's anything that gives me hope and optimism, it has been the leading voice that young people have played in recent months in both calling attention to these issues as well as demanding change. And I think it is them that will hold us all accountable to whether or not we follow through on the commitments that many of us are making during this particularly challenging period of time.
So before we hit record, you were telling me about some incredible mentoring programs that have just wrapped up and the onset of the school year, and your kids have just gone off to college. So I know that your days are incredibly busy, but tell me what the best part is.
Well, look, we've seen a ton of students that we've placed in internships. I have my own kids that have gone off to college. And so I've experienced firsthand all of the range of emotions. But for me, the best part of my day is when the unsolicited email drops into my box or text message from one of our students that has enjoyed one of our programs and been impacted by it and has taken time out of their day to send a quick note to simply say thank you and to explain the difference that it made. For me, those are the tangible reminders of the impact that we're having at Pensil, and that really everybody in the nonprofit community works for to make sure that those that we are here at the center of our mission to help are actually seeing the benefit of the work we do. And I'm lucky that I get one or two of those messages almost every day, and always brings a smile to my face.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Greg, for joining me today and hitting record on one of our conversations. I always enjoy them so much and appreciate you giving a peek into the work that Pensil is doing and what this world looks like right now. I think it's an enigma for many of us. So appreciate you sharing your point of view.
My pleasure. And Danielle, thank you for all the work that you and Common Impact do. You have certainly been a help to Pensil over the years and recently through the pro bono projects. So thank you for all you and your team are continuing to do.
Thanks so much for listening to Pro Bono Perspectives today. If you like our show and want to learn more, check out our website at commonimpact.org. Leave us a review and tell your friends and colleagues about us. Tune in to our upcoming episodes to hear from everyday leaders using their skills to help their communities.